Today's episode of Expanded Perspectives is sponsored by Gaia.com. If y'all are like us, you've exhausted everywhere else you find your documentaries on the strange and unusual and the fun. And if you like grand conspiracies and more breakaway societies, paranormal, ancient civilizations like we all do, and UFOs, well, we've found the place right at your fingertips, folks. You can stream videos from anywhere, from your living room or on the go, with access to over 7,000 titles, all on Gaia.com, G-A-I-A. Now, you can get this for a monthly plan of $9.95 a month. Your first month will only be 99 cents. Now, there is a three-month plan and an annual plan. So, if you're into the things that we're into, and judging by what you're listening to, you are, start enjoying Gaia.com. Expand your perspective even more. G-A-I-A.com. There, friends, and thanks again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives. I'm Cam Hale, and as always, joining me here in the studio, it's mi amigo, it's Mario, it's Filio, Kyle Filson, sitting across the table from me, and he's wearing his. Now, what do we call these? There's a lot of people call them different things: toboggans, toques. I don't, you know, what is this? He's got his Dallas Stars cover on that he's got over there. What? You went to Canada. What are the Canadians? What are, do they have a name for it?
I think they call them toboggans.
Is it all toboggans?
That's what I think. That's what I was taught. But my family is from New Jersey and New York, so that's Yankee talk. But that's the way I was brought up.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, but I like
people call them Scullies, I think. Yeah. People have all kinds of different names.
Yeah, it looks good, though. It's got to, he's representing the Dallas Stars, which they're off to a little bit of a rocky start.
They played good last night against Colorado. They played real good. They won 3-0. But yeah, they're pretty even. They're like 10-10.
How did you feel when your favorite player helped score 6-2 on them just the other night?
Who are you talking about?
Sidney Crosby. I watched him. He was breaking them off.
Oh, my God. I am not a Sidney Crosby fan. My favorite player is Steve Yzerman. I know he's retired, but that's always my favorite. I'm not a big fan of the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Here we go.
I like the Dallas Stars. I used to be a big Red Wings fan, but that was years ago. Before, when I was a kid, we didn't have a hockey team.
Yeah.
So I used to watch all the Red Wings games. That's how I became an Yzerman fan.
Yeah.
And then, you know, in like 93, when the Stars came here, of course, you become a hometown, you know, supporter of the team.
Yeah, and then we won the Cup.
Yeah, we did. I wish we would get back there.
It's going to be a while.
It looks like on paper we have a pretty good chance, but doesn't seem like they've been playing too well. Moving on, man. What did you find for us here in the news?
Y'all, I've got some crazy stuff. First of all, we're going to have to touch base on some crazy stories we're going to get into with this whole thing. Now, when I say crazy stories, I mean some wild sightings. You know, we all love them. We all love the idea, and we all wish that we would have some wild sightings. I know I do. I know Kyle does. We always talk about it. Man, I would like to see something crazy like that. There was a fella called in named John. He lives in Miami, Florida. He called in to Coast back on November 20th. And I want you to listen to this. He says this: back in February, I saw what looked like a large monkey, about 7 feet tall or so.
7 feet tall.
Now look at this. And I was able to call the zoo and give a description to them on the tape. And I was trying to get the Department of Natural Resources for the state to warn them that this thing was running around. It was around for a couple of hours that night. This was in the downtown area, believe it or not. But this was kind of like a wilderness area near the river. He goes on to say that in Florida, in Miami, I didn't smell anything. I eventually got within 20 feet of the thing and tried to get a picture. And it says, like he said, my camera failed. It wouldn't work. So he's trying to take a picture. He couldn't get his picture to work. He says, I just couldn't get a picture. I couldn't get it with my cell phone either. And the strangest thing of the entire night, I don't even like to tell this to people because it sounds like I'm crazy. This is what he says. At the end of that night, that thing was joined by an owl. It says an owl showed up. It had what looked like the face of a man on it.
Whoa.
The owl
had the face of a man
on it.
And this 7-foot-tall monkey is practicing falconry.
Yeah.
That's what you're telling me?
Yeah. He's got him one with him. Yeah.
Have you ever seen how strong a monkey is? I mean, why would you ever get within 20 feet of one that's 7 foot
tall? A 7 foot tall one with an owl. You got an owl. It's gonna tear out my eyes and then it's going to tear me to pieces. Yeah. Yeah. He says, I've had nightmares about this since.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe I saw something that way, but I did. I wished I could have gotten it on film. Says this, and they both more or less went toward the ground and they both just dissolved. He said, it's like they just evaporated. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe what I saw. He said, I can't believe it either. He said, I had 2 cups of coffee at the beginning of the night, so I knew I was well aware of what was going on.
Yeah, I think there was more than caffeine in that coffee,
Makes you wonder, right?
That is an incredible sighting. I mean, what could you mistake that for?
Man, I have no idea.
You know?
There's nothing, you don't misidentify that, right?
No.
That's out. Okay, now get a load of this. Here's one that instantly when I saw this, I'm like, you're going to love this. Stan Gordon, and this comes. Now, a lot of these stories come from Phantoms and Monsters. Lon gets these guys dumping stuff on him like crazy.
Yeah.
All these stories. You're going to love this one. This comes from Uniontown, Pennsylvania, back in August of 2000. It says, 5 witnesses observed what they described as an alien glide across a field. The witnesses described the being as being about 5 feet tall with long, slender extremities. Okay, we've all heard that, right?
Yeah.
It carried a brown staff about 5 feet long. You shall not pass.
Yeah, right?
It says it was observed for about a minute from a distance of 250 feet. No apparent disturbances to the area around the being were reported. The creature appeared to glide about 6 inches above the ground, according to witnesses. They also state that weather conditions were cool and clear with no wind. Now, no sounds were reported, and witnesses commented on it seemingly abnormally quiet at the time. So, which is just like the fella in Miami just discussed.
Yeah.
No sound. That Oz effect thing we talk about. They say that crickets and other normal background noises were absent.
Yeah.
That says the witnesses lost sight of the being when they drove a short distance up the road to an area which they thought would offer a better view, only about 75 to 100 feet from where it was last seen. A small knoll obstructed their view as they drove. When they got to the closer location, poof, it was gone. The witnesses returned home after the encounter, and they've reported no serious effects from their sighting. But this is what all 3 of them did claim that they were very tired the next day, which could be an adrenaline dump. It could have come from whatever. But still, a gliding alien with a bow staff.
That's crazy.
As it's working its kung fu magic up there in the hills, right?
Yeah, I like that.
Now, this one is you're really going to enjoy.
You got another one?
I got another one for you.
Oh, yeah. All right.
From Florida. And then we're going to move on. But okay, from Florida, from Gulf Breeze, January 12th of 1988, a fella named Ed Walters was in his pickup on US 98 when an object appeared ahead of him, shining a white beam of light through the windshield. Now, he says it partially paralyzed his forearms and his hands. So how terrifying would that be if somebody could hit you with a flashlight and your hands quit working?
Yeah.
That's, first of all, I want that. I want in a beam so I can shoot it on my wife's mouth where she'd be quiet, like, you know.
Well, this happened probably during that Gulf Breeze wave. I mean, remember that? There was tons of sightings back then.
He says this, that he stopped the truck on the side of the road because he now felt numb and his arms were stinging. He says the object approached quickly and then now hovered 3 feet above the roadway. Says the witness was able to grab his shotgun and he exited the truck, attempting to crawl underneath it.
Yeah.
He says at this point, the object got brighter and came closer. Says the witness again hit on the back of his legs by that white beam of light. Says the object now began rotating and a blue beam of light appeared underneath it. Says the beam apparently deposited, get a load of this now, not one or two, but 5 small beings on the roadway. says that all of them wore some type of shield-like coverings and had large black oval eyes and were carrying, not staves this time, but glowing rods.
Yeah, man, that seems to be a thing that we've been talking about on several episodes in a row, where the sightings are always carrying these rods. Remember, yeah. The rods is what like knocks you unconscious.
You're right.
And brings you back.
Says the beings now walked towards the witness, who then managed to crawl back into the truck, somehow got it to start, and took off from the area. Got out of there. So it didn't affect the vehicle.
Yeah.
But it did, you know, he's like, my legs weren't working right. My hands weren't working right. I'm sure they was, you know, bodily fluids all in my pants at that point. If it had happened, dude, I'd had to turn the shotgun on myself.
Yeah, that's exactly what I did.
No, but I just love all these crazy accounts. But the little small beings, I wish it would have said the height, because in my mind, I'm not picturing 3 footers. I'm picturing like, you know, 10 inches.
Real
I'm thinking
tiny.
Like small. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if it is, you know, I'm sure it's that what they're mean is the typical gray sighting, but for some reason, the small, like small soldier kind of stuff is what gets me going. I'm like, ah,
speaking of small and creepy, Cam, Uh-oh. Get ready for cyborg beetles.
Oh, well, hey, we got to have something replace the dung beetle downfall. If there is such a thing,
real insects that are controlled just like robots. Now, Motherboard traveled to Singapore to meet with a Dr. Hirotaka Saito.
Who?
Hirotaka Saito, who's an aerospace engineer at Nanyang Technological University. And Saito and his team are turning live beetles into cyborgs by electrically controlling their motor functions.
I think of that roach on The Fifth Element.
Right, yeah.
That's what I think of every time.
Yeah, right. It says, having studied the beetles' muscle configuration, neural networks, and leg control, the researchers wired the insects so that they can be controlled by a switchboard. In doing so, the researchers could manipulate the different walking gaits, speeds, flying direction, and other forms of motion. Essentially, these beetles became like robots with no control over their own motor functioning. And it says these researchers control these beetles through this wiring, and their energy still comes naturally from the food they eat. Hence, the muscles are driven by the insects themselves, but they have no willpower over how their muscles move. Moreover, turning beetles into cyborgs seems not to be very harmful to them. Their natural lifespan is only 3 to 6 months, and even with the researchers' interference, they can survive for several months. According to these researchers, a beetle has never died right after a stimulation. And while this technology may seem crazy, the implications are very practical. Sensors that detect heat, and hence people, can be placed on these beetles so that they can be manipulated to move towards a person. This can be helpful when searching for someone, such as in a criminal investigation or finding a terrorist.
Hmm.
These researchers have very serious plans for what they're going to be using this for. They also said it can be used to save people. Like, say there's an earthquake or a large land mudslide or something, and people become trapped in rubble. Well, you can get one of those little tiny beetles to go through really small cracks and to tell if someone's still alive or not, because they can detect heat or whatever.
Just like shake out a whole big bucket of them, and then they just spread out all in the rubble to find people.
Yeah, so this is kind of...
Wow.
These aren't robotic beetles. These are real living beetles that they've somehow biohacked. And now they're controlling them like a remote control robot beetle, but it's really still a live beetle. I mean, so you might be... Like now, you might think that's a housefly. It could be a rigged housefly spying on you.
A biohacked
really,
fly.
Yeah, that... I mean, this is really creepy the way the technology is moving.
For sure. Well, even that, we had covered a while back about the snakes or the worms and things that were actually a cyborg. They were cybernetic and things that you could put in. And we had talked about it. I love how everything is sold by, well, if there's a big natural disaster, that's the reason we need this.
Yeah.
I'm like, come on, man.
Yeah.
Who you think you lied to?
Yeah.
If there's a big natural disaster, why is there? Oh, okay. So now there's beetles, and like you said, there's houseflies and snakes and all that. How easy would it be? Always makes me think back to what Nick was talking about when they tried to take those cats and wire them up for infrasound. Remember they did all that?
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
It's the same thing.
They're going to be biohacking birds because they just fly and land in trees, and then they're eavesdropping on our enemies. I mean, you got to think of all that. Yeah, that's
the old days of two GI men sitting in a car and just scoping out a place.
Yeah.
I mean, that's over. Or the guys that dress up like a fake plumber and there's a plumbing van parked, you know.
What movie are you watching? Are you watching that off one of those channels you shouldn't be on?
You don't ever see those? Well, they're always like spying on people, and they're always in like the generic like plumber's van.
Yeah, right.
And you know. If those days are over, you're going to actually have a bird. You're going to have a beetle. You're going to have a rabbit.
And then you can control it. Not only is it small, but you can control it.
Yeah. Yeah.
How wild is that?
Like, man, why is this? I'm making people paranoid already. Man, that squirrel's been looking at me for 2 hours.
Looking at me all funny like, yeah.
Yeah. That's coming.
It is. It's coming. Well, in celebration of who we got to chit chat with today, I'm going to be talking a little bit right quick about some more UFO sightings, folks.
Yeah, please.
Our homie, Roger Marsh, over at Open Minds, posted this. This actually took place October 13th of this year. A Wisconsin witness there at Medford reported seeing a hovering sphere in the night and that it split into three spheres before turning completely off.
Whoa.
Yeah. Everybody got their pens and papers. Case number 79892. This took place in a National Forest area around 7 p.m. This is what it stated. This was our fourth night at the campground, and the first night since we had been there that the sky was clear. I had noticed a bright white sphere in the eastern sky, and I'd been trying to figure out what it was. It was too big for a star, and I thought that it might be a planet. All of a sudden, it started to move, slowly at first and then faster. I told my friend what I was seeing, as my friend is blind. It was moving south to southeast and had become obscured by some evergreen trees. Now, Roger writes that the witness goes on and ran from a picnic table down some steps to a dock on the campground to get a better view of this object that was, of course, moving south, but the object could not be seen. It says then, back at the picnic table area, the witness again saw the sphere. He says this, while I was describing the sphere and scrambling to find a camera or a video recorder, the sphere split, forming two spheres. When it split, it appeared as though the new sphere dripped off of the original, which we've heard this numerous times, right? Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it says that these spheres were originally aligned vertically, and then the lower one moved upward to be aligned horizontally. And that once the spheres were aligned horizontally, one of the spheres split again, and they were now three aligned horizontally.
Wow.
It says that he noticed, the witness, that they change in size when they split. He said each time there was a split, they became smaller, which would make, it's making sense. It's like it's peeling away. So it's not like it's dropping a drone.
No.
It's the same size as the others.
And the description of it looked like it's melting or dripping. That has been, that's come out in so many cases. Yeah. I mean, even that supposed fragment me and you held.
Where we all got the walking pneumonia?
The guy was driving down the road and he said it looked like something was dripping off.
Yes.
And when he went out there, that's what he found. I know, it's crazy, but it's very similar.
Yeah. Well, he said that they were all bright white, and that the two spheres on either side just seemed to turn off, leaving the one on in the middle. And the sphere in the middle began to change colors, like cycling through white to red orange. And then the witness describes that this continued for about a minute, and then it just turned off. Says the original sphere was slightly bigger than a BB held at arm's length, and it was oriented approximately 45 degrees above the horizon. So that kind of gives you an idea of how far away he was from it, you know, if it was up there like that. Now, he says that he couldn't estimate how far away he was. Okay, so you're thinking about holding a BB out there. You know, it could have been right there. So you really don't get a good eyesight as far as a size. But he says that since I'm not familiar with the area, he says that I don't have an estimate of how far away the object might have been from the campground. Says the object didn't make any noise, and I didn't see anything like an exhaust trail. Now, he says that the overall sighting lasted, you ready for this, 40 to 50 minutes.
Wow.
And that the 20 minutes, this is about 20 minutes after all the objects had disappeared, he says this, that a plane flew over the campground. He says it was easy to hear the plane's engine, and you could see the outline of the plane in the sky as well as the aviation lights, of course, blinking off and on. But he said, I didn't get a photo of it. My camera had fallen out of my backpack on up there by the picnic table. He said, and I didn't know where it was at until the next morning. He said, he goes, we did get the video camera out, but we're unable to record because the camera wouldn't work.
Yeah, see?
It always seems like it's emanating something that ruins the whole deal. Now, this was, of course, investigated by the MUFON state director there in Wisconsin, Susan Britton, and she closed the cases again, an unknown. Like, what is that?
Yeah.
Helicopters don't do that. You know, what's hovering, making no sound, changing shape, making more of them than vanishing?
It sounds kind of like the Marfa lights or the Brown Mountain lights, too, you know?
Exactly.
I don't know. But speaking, man, it seems like a lot of UFO sightings. In fact, there was a big a mass sighting over Turkey recently.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was one recently that just happened over Canada. And they even have a video of this. It says a video formation of UFOs that witness claimed was chasing him just one of the multiple sightings in and around the town of Brandon, Canada last week, according to various news reports. So many witnesses came forward that the UFO sightings made the local news, and when it was posted, that said that UFOs might have been flares from a military exercise. Now, of course, conspiracy theorists started floating the idea, of course, of another government cover-up. Local newspapers reported that there was multiple sightings. At least 40 to 50 people called in to say that they saw this thing over Brandon, Canada, which I think is near Winnipeg, somewhere in Manitoba. And they said that it looked exactly like the same thing that happened in 1997, known as the Phoenix Lights over there in Arizona. Now, everybody's familiar with that. It looked like the same thing. It says they had basically the same kind of components, the same incidences, and it was reported by so many people. Of course, the government's come forward and said, yes, it was a military exercise. So half the people, of course, are saying, yeah, okay, that's probably what it was. And then conspiracy theorists are on the fence. They're saying, no, they're just saying that. Every time there's these strange lights up there, they always want to claim it's a military exercise. Mm-hmm. Now, watch the video. It does look a lot like the Phoenix Lights. But to me, it does look like military flares to me. Like, in other words, the Phoenix Lights were seen for like a long period of time, like an hour, I think. Mm-hmm. And there was thousands of people that called in about that. This, you know, I don't know how long they were there, but it doesn't look from the film I saw that didn't last very long. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I think it could be military flares, but what do I know? It might be a UFO. Seems like there's a lot of activity going on. And they even claim that in that area is kind of known as a Canadian UFO hotspot.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of sightings
Wow.
in that area. But sticking with UFOs, the guest we have on today's show has just written a book called Somewhere in the Skies. He's a friend of the show, Ryan Sprague. If you're not familiar with his work, he's a professional playwright and screenwriter who lives in New York City. He's also an investigative journalist specializing, of course, in the topic of UFOs. He's written for numerous publications, including Open Minds Magazine, Phenomena Magazine, UFO Truth Magazine, and he speaks at a lot of the UFO conferences and stuff around. He's been featured on ABC News, Fox News, The Science Channel, and he was actually recently on the Travel Channel's Mysteries at the Museum. And, of course, he's a co-host of a friend of ours, the podcast known as Into the Fray with Shannon LeGros, Sam Sheeran, and, of course, Ryan. He also does another podcast called UFO Mod Pod. Now, mm-hmm. I'm not familiar with that show, but Ryan's a great guy. And, in fact, he reached out to me weeks ago about coming on about this book before it was even out. And we've just been so busy. I haven't had a chance to have him on. So I'm really glad that we're able to have him on today. So when we get back from the break, folks, we're going to be speaking with Ryan Sprague about his new book, Somewhere in the Skies. Stick with us. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we got a spectacular guest this afternoon that's going to be speaking to us about his new book, Somewhere in the Skies. And on the show, everybody knows that listens, we talk about UFOs all the time because I personally, as well as Cam, have a deep fascination when it comes to the subject of UFOs, whether it's Roswell or Rendlesham Forest or alien abduction. I just did a show last Monday on alien abductions. Ryan's new book is very interesting, and he's approached it in a new way. If you listen to our show and listen to the interviews we do, we try to have guests on that not only write about the subjects we're interested in, but approach it in a new way. And that's what he's done, is he's talking about he's collected a massive amount of UFO sightings that all these people have had, whether they're military pilots, whether they're just normal people, and also people that have been abducted by aliens. And what we take away from him is the experiences they have and how it's changed their beliefs on everything they've had just by seeing some of these things. And so I'd like to welcome Ryan Sprague. How are you doing, Ryan?
Ah, so good. Thank you so much for having me, guys. It's definitely an honor.
Yeah, man. I really enjoyed your book. Like I said, you sent it over. We read about it. I had seen when it was coming out for weeks before it actually had dropped. Now, Richard Dolan, he's your publisher, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. I saw him, messaging out on the social media and stuff about it. So I got excited. I was like, ooh, I want to see what he has to say. And of course, you sent it over. We read it, and I told Cam, I was like, you got to check this out. Cam read it. And I guess to start the interview off, you had an experience yourself. When did that take place? And can you give the audience some idea what you experienced?
Absolutely. Yeah. The origin story, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's what everybody's always like. What got you into it? So here we go.
Yep. Yep. You got to. You got to ease into it. So, yeah, I did have a UFO sighting when I was 12 years old. This was in 1995. And I was on a weekend getaway with my parents to the St. Lawrence River, which it runs all through upstate New York and sort of separates the New York border from Canada. So I was an avid fisher, guys. I'd been doing it since I was even younger than 12. And I loved doing it at night. So I would go out on the dock at the hotel we were staying at for this weekend getaway. I had my Discman and my headphones on. I was listening to Dookie, the Green Day album. I actually remember that till this day. And I was reeling my line in, and I noticed these three white lights reflecting in the water. So, you know, naturally I look up, I'm expecting to see a plane whizzing by, and I'd say probably about 200-300 feet up, maybe, there is this triangular formation with three distinct white lights, and there's a fuzzy orange, kind of reddish sphere in the center. I couldn't see any type of structure, but I also could not see the stars behind it. So, you know, it had to be some sort of triangular craft, at least. That's kind of what I assumed. So, you know, I start flipping out. I rip my headphones off. My Discman goes flying, and I expect to hear this thing, right? You know, but there's nothing. It's just complete silence, and all I could hear was the water hitting the dock. And I could feel this, I described it before as almost like when you're at a rock concert and you're right next to that amp and you can feel it thumping in your chest. It was this vibration running down my ears, my neck, and like I said, into my chest and my stomach. So I'm frozen there for a minute, just watching this thing float above me. And then it starts to drift, you know, away from me, over the water towards the Canadian border. So I start yelling for my dad to come out to look at this thing. He's inside watching a Yankees game. So, you know, there's no getting him away from that. So I do jet into the hotel room for a second. I grab him to come out. And he did see the tail end of this thing as it was leaving. So I knew I wasn't just seeing things. You know, he assumed it was a plane. It disappeared out of sight. And to this day, I still feel like whatever this thing was, that it actually went into the water. Again, that might have been my perception at the time, the angle of which I saw it, but I could have sworn this thing went into the water. But yeah, man, I was terrified. I became obsessed with UFOs after that, you know, sort of that cliche. I took out book after book about it. I started writing essays to myself, interviewing people in my hometown of Syracuse, New York, and kind of just snowballed from there.
Man, that's incredible. And what's interesting I found when I was reading the account is your sighting is so much like so many others, where we talk about it on the show, we joke about it all the time. It seemed like back when Kenneth Arnold first has his sighting, it was a flying saucer, literally looked like a disc. And then later it seems that they started looking more like cigars. And then at some point, everybody started seeing these black triangles. And it's exactly like what you're talking about, a black triangle with white lights on each tip and then a red light in the center. And then also some of the newer ones, it seems like they're almost giant chevrons. And
yes,
so that does seem, I mean, that's odd. Is this different types of extraterrestrials that are visiting, or is this something that's manufactured here on Earth by some breakaway society or our government? And just like they do with all military aircraft, I mean, in the 60s, you know, they were flying F-4 Phantoms, and then they moved into, you know, F-14s and F-15s and F-16s. And now they're using F-18s and of course, F-35s, whatever. But they, you know, as time goes on, they're getting better at building this technology. I don't know, but you've amassed a ton of sightings, and lots of books have done that. But what you take away from those sightings is the human angle, what people experienced when they saw this and how it changed them. Could you tell us any interesting sightings or some of your favorites from the book that you were able to uncover?
Absolutely. There's one UFO sighting in particular that I kept coming back to. And this guy came to me really early on in my interviewing process. This was a gentleman named Scott, who was a retired radioman, first class for the Coast Guard. He's also a retired postal service worker. And he had a sighting in 1974 in Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio. And he was at a drive-in movie theater with a friend of his. You know, they were sort of just passing the summer night away, seeing a movie, having a couple beers, maybe pick up a girl or two, you know, typical thing guys did. And he and his friend, they're waiting for the movie to start, and they notice over the movie screen there's this object just, you know, starting to come in over the parking lot. And he described this thing as solid black and chevron shaped, like you said earlier, and it was making no noise. They had their windows down. They couldn't hear anything. Movie hadn't started yet. So he and the friend, they get out of the car. You know, they want to know what the heck's going on. And they watch as the thing starts to coast over the parking lot. And at this point, everyone's getting out of their cars, just staring up at this thing. And then some people were trying to start their cars to get out of there, but nobody's cars would start. And we've heard this a lot of times before with a lot of these sightings, that they do have some sort of electromagnetic effect on cars below or equipment used. And at this point, the thing's directly above them. And Scott, he remembers feeling like time kind of slowed down and everything around him was hazy and just very weird. And, you know, as the thing starts to float away, he remembers feeling normal again, and people's cars started to start up again. And the weirdest thing about this, guys, was after it disappeared out of sight, Scott goes to use the restroom. That was his immediate reaction, and nobody in the whole parking lot was talking about what just happened. They're all just dazed and, you know, acting like nothing had just happened. And Scott can't remember anything that happened in those moments. He gets back in his car. They watch the movie in its entirety, and everyone just leaves. And he doesn't speak about it, he or his friend, on the whole car ride home. So, yeah, I caught up with Scott some years later, and he said that the only reason he remembered this sighting was that he had a trigger event. He saw a UFO book in a store, and it brought back all these memories, you know, hit him like a ton of bricks, and, you know, how the air was super thick when this happened, and time slowed down, and all of these feelings started to really ball up in him. It really affected him, you know, it scared him. And to this day, he's still trying to find that friend who was in the car with him so that he had some sort of corroboration on just exactly what they saw. And he also questions why the thing was so obvious, so blatant at being seen. So yeah, guys, this was a fascinating case, and it definitely changed Scott. He'd never experienced anything like this in his time with the Coast Guard. He'd never, ever imagined even thinking about UFOs or aliens, and this event just sort of fell into his lap, and his perception of reality was challenged.
It sounds like they all had a mass Oz effect, almost, the way everything that was silent. And then what you're talking about is, it's like it just wiped them all, like the big flash from Men in Black. It just wiped them all, and they all just went back to doing their thing again. I mean, there's no way you can have an accident, and people at a business beside it will all be talking about the accident they all just witnessed. Everybody there witnesses this, and yet nobody's talking about it.
Yeah, I remember this story in the book. I'm glad you brought that one up. Yeah, I read it, and I couldn't believe it. This thing comes over a drive-in theater. Everybody's there. Everybody's looking at it. And then when it disappears, everybody just goes like right back to watching the movie, and nobody says nothing.
Nothing. Not a word.
That's not normal human behavior.
No. Not at all. And especially with a mass sighting, you know, you have something like the Phoenix Lights or what was seen over Chicago O'Hare Airport. People they see it and they remember it happening. The fact that we have this one witness, this entire event rests on his shoulders. Nobody else is talking about it. And that, I can't even imagine what that must feel like, to be the only one who remembers it. No one can corroborate your story. But I'll tell you what, guys, after hearing him, having him call me, retell this story, you could hear it in his voice. This guy was sincere. He was genuine, and he had absolutely no reason to be not telling me what he firmly believes happened.
Mm-hmm. I guess the thing, too, there's another part of is I'm sure you spoke to a lot of people, a ton of people, before you narrowed it down to this group that you've reported on. So going through that, you had to come across some BS. You had to come across somewhere you could be like, look, I mean, I appreciate what you're telling me. Without even saying it to him, but you were thinking, this probably is a little more embellished than what really happened, you know, or you can start seeing through the veil on some of the stories because you can get so many of them and you get bogged down where you have to be very subjective when you look at each one of these cases. But the cases that you picked is, and I'm sure it's affected everyone in different ways, but these, it's truly affected these people. And it's much like what we discussed off air before this, and we even talked about, everybody seems to agree now that we don't know if it's extraterrestrial or if it's, you know, terrestrial or what it is, but we all agree that it still affects the people the same way, whether what they saw is what they think it was or something completely different. It still affects you in that exact same way.
Yeah. Yeah. It brings to light so much of humanity, guys, that I feel often gets overshadowed when we hear about UFO sightings. And that's really what, like you said, what the book is about. It's not about the, you know, the when and the where. It's the who and the why. Who are these people who are having these sightings? Let's hear from them. Let's hear what they think happened, rather than have some quote-unquote UFO researcher, which is a term I actually take a lot of contention with. You know, my mentor Peter Robbins always told me, you know, to be a ufologist, spin around three times, touch your nose, and you're done. And I understand that, and I even say in the intro of the book, I'm really not okay with that term, ufologist. You know, what does that mean? Yes, I study the topic of UFOs, but when it comes down to it, I'm not a scientist, I'm not a psychologist, I'm not an anthropologist. I'm a relayer of stories. That's what I do. I'm a playwright here in New York City. That's my bread and butter. I create characters. So I wanted to sort of infuse that into this project, into my passion about UFOs, and focus on those people and what they think is going on and why these events may have happened to them.
Well, and there's another thing in the book that I found interesting is most of the stories that you reported on were in March, April, and May. So it's in the springtime. And I was like, man, that's a really strange little thing. The way it comes in is you start looking at it, just like we talked about before, Kyle and I've always discussed the ties in and stuff like missing 411 and things like that. You start looking at this a different way and you're like, man, it sure is odd that a lot of that happens around that same time.
Well, I was reading some of the accounts from Ryan's book, and I started noticing a pattern that everybody was smoking a cigarette when they saw this. And then quickly Cam was like, well, yeah, because that's when you would see one. Because you're just looking out a window while you're driving, or you're standing outside taking a smoke break from work. And what are you going to do? You know, most of these happen before cell phones. You're going to look at the sky, and that's why you encounter these things.
That's really interesting, man. I didn't notice that pattern. It's almost like a subconscious either pro or anti tobacco.
No, you go back and throughout the first like five chapters, almost I would say 80% of the sightings, almost every one of them, the people were smoking a cigarette at the time.
See, that's really cool because, again, there's things that readers of this book, and I'm not using this to pitch the book, but just to say that there are things that you're going to catch and you're going to connect with or find patterns with that I necessarily didn't mean to do. But that's the beauty of it. I wanted to find these everyday people having these experiences and then let the reader decide themselves. You know, I wasn't out to cast judgment on the people. I wanted to tell their story as accurate as I could and get it out there, man. Get conversations going. Absolutely. And that's what we're doing tonight.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, for sure. There's so many. I guess it's the thing is because I've never been affected by something like this. You know, I've never, I wouldn't, it's funny because I know a lot of people, and you even mentioned it in one of the stories, it seems like people will turn to religion because it's the only thing that makes them feel comfortable lots of times when they have these encounters is because they're like, this is something that I was raised, you know, in a religious home and I was raised to believe this way. And then this happens and it shook everything that I thought was real and that I thought, you know, this is the way the world worked. It shook it completely out of them. And it seems like some people it affects very negatively, some positively, but some also very negatively, like it truly affects their life in a bad way. Now, do you have one of those that you can discuss?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, these definitely are not all space brother love and light stories. Mm-hmm. That is not a pattern I found. Human beings run a very interesting spectrum of how we perceive each other, events, and, you know, there is that good and that bad energy, that implication to an event. And yeah, definitely there are those who don't think that this was for the better. I have a really interesting one. You bring up religion, and this chapter was actually called A Mother's Prayer. And this is one of the most dramatic stories I came across. And this was from a woman named Patty who lives in Michigan. And she had a really dramatic triangular UFO sighting back in 2006, in which she and one of her daughters, they witnessed a massive craft hovering just above their home. And Patty was heading out to walk her dogs, and right away she knew something was off. The dogs were not coming off the porch. Clearly something was out there. She didn't know what. That's when she looked up and saw this thing right above the home. And it stopped her dead in her tracks. She couldn't believe what she was seeing. So she starts yelling for her younger daughter, Jennifer, to come outside, you know, make sure she's not crazy. And Jennifer, she comes out, and the both of them, they're just staring up at this thing. And it's slowly creeping closer until it is directly above them. And what was most interesting about this one, guys, is Patty, she heard a low humming or like a whooshing sound. So she asks Jennifer if she can hear it. And when she looks at her daughter, the daughter is covering her ears and telling her mom how unbearably loud the noise is. So they're having completely different experiences in terms of hearing this craft. And all while this is happening, Patty, she's starting to feel calm, collected, almost euphoric. And when I spoke to the daughter, she told me that she remembered being absolutely terrified. She felt in danger during the whole thing. So again, you have a mother and daughter perceiving this thing completely differently. So anyways, this triangle, it darts off at breakneck speed and it disappears. And some time passes and she has another daughter, Jessica. One night she's getting ready for bed and she's walking in the hallway of the house and she sees this figure coming out of her younger sister's bedroom, and she assumes that it's her sister, you know, heading to bed. But when the figure came into sight, it was not her sister. She described this being to me as being about 3 feet tall. It had a disproportionately sized head, you know, very nondescript facial features, big black eyes. So right there, guys, you've got like your typical gray. So she then went to say that it had a robe on with a hood. I don't know what to make of this. It's like an ancient monk gray of some sort. And it's just staring at her. And it slowly starts to move into her parents' room. So she freaks out, right? She sprints into her bedroom. She hides under the covers. And she just doesn't know what to do. And then she hears her mom's voice. So she takes the covers down. And the mom's coming into the room just to check on her. And behind the mom, she can see this being following, just looking at everything in the room. Again, she's petrified, frozen. She can't say anything. Mom kisses her on the forehead, good night. And the thing follows the mom out of the room. So after this, guys, you've got such an escalation happening in terms of the triangle and then this being. So then both daughters start having nightmares about this being. And it just seems to be lingering in the back of their subconscious constantly. And then the entire family start having almost paranormal activity happening in their house. Things are getting shut off. Things are flying across the room. It's terrifying. These three women are literally living like a nightmare of strangeness happening. So having been spiritual beforehand, they think this is evil. It's demonic. Something in a spiritual context is happening in this home, around this home, and it is not good. They stop talking to one another. They become very alienated, and it rips the family apart. They didn't speak for a long time. The mom became very depressed. The daughters, you know, started missing school and having things happen with friends and family. And it closed them off to the world. And it got to a point where they couldn't take it anymore. And they turned to prayer. They started praying for these things to stop, to go away. And it worked. It worked for this family. It brought them back together again. It decreased the amount of activity. And I don't know what to say, guys. I honestly don't know what to say in terms of how prayer worked in this case, but it did. This is what they connected to, how they perceived what was going on, which is a huge factor in any UFO or quote-unquote abduction experience, is how the person perceives it. And how do you move on from there, you know?
Man, that's what's interesting is the very beginning, the one mother and the mother and the one daughter were so diametrically opposed to their experience during the sighting, but then later what evolved, with the terrorizing them at their home and everything, that is,
well, how one can hear it and the other one's like, I don't hear anything, and one's just dying from it.
Yeah,
you know what it made me think of?
What'd you think?
Those ringtones, you know, like the kids hat used to have. My son went through this where it's my ears are so old I couldn't hear it. And it would be like a high pitch, and he could hear it, and he would be like, oh, yeah, you know, you knew whenever people were calling or texting you in class because old ears couldn't hear it. And he would play it, and I'd be like, dude, I don't hear what you're – but nothing. And he's just laughing the whole time because my daughter comes out of her room. She's like, what is that sound? So that makes me think of it. It's like they're at a level – that's how they sneak up on us old people, is they come sliding in. Like, man, uh-uh. Well, and let me ask you that. With that story right there, Ryan, let me ask you this, because – we discuss often breakaway societies and the fact that some of these could very easily be ships from a breakaway society. Somebody that, you know, and of course, now that's a unique term in itself, because when you think about breakaway society, I always picture crazy Nazi bases in Antarctica or somewhere out in the middle, you know, in like a hollow earth is what I always think of. And there's like guys with giant zeppelins and all this old school stuff. Right. I think of that, and I don't ever really put it down as the military industrial complex that has a group of people that's all they do. And that whole family, much like what we talk City 9 or Town 9 or whatever in Russia, these quiet little towns that are built that nobody comes really in and out of, that they don't speak of. And they're only built for certain things, because there are towns out there around the world that are that way now. And people don't really know about these. But I always think of that. But how could this be, you know, a breakaway society type thing whenever they're seeing an alien gray or something almost demonic shows up to this house?
That's a really good question, man. I mean, the whole term breakaway civilization, actually my publisher likes to take credit for that actual term. So, you know, we'll give it to him. We'll definitely give it to him.
Yeah, the D-Man. We've set the D-Man in this, and he'll make your head hurt, because me and Kyle sit there and ask him questions, and I'm like, Richard, I'm like, you're going to have to slow down, man, because look, you're going to have to talk real slow with me. Use small words. Did you make my head hurt?
Oh, I cannot even tell you about some of the overnight phone conversations we've had where I said, I quit. I'm done. I'm not doing this.
I'm tapped out.
But I'm tapped out. So a breakaway civilization. Let's sort of just look at that term. Some sort of, let's say, what, secret group with access to advanced technology, advanced science, and they just don't share it with the rest of the world. You know, one scientific breakthrough leads to another and leads to another, so on. So the next thing you know, you got a separate group of humanity that is far beyond the rest of the world. Now, like you said, this may not have to do with the military-industrial complex. It very well could be a completely separate entity working with this extraterrestrial civilization. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a very out there sort of theory. One that I simply don't have enough knowledge to even begin to break down. But it's fascinating that, and look at these triangular craft. They want to be seen. You know, whatever I saw in 1995 wanted to be seen. Whatever the Chevron thing was that Scott saw in this triangle that Patty saw, these things were so freaking obvious. You know, this was not some elusive saucer zipping through the sky or blinking in and out. This thing floated there and was saying, look at me, look at me.
Yeah, it's so like,
you
it's like,
gotta wonder, you know, if a breakaway civilization wants to be so secretive and they are in control of these craft, why what is their intention? What's their agenda at making us look at these things and how we're going to react to them?
I think it's them testing their craft, like they're showing off a little bit, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I picture the movie. What's the movie? Contact with
Jodie Foster.
With Jodie Foster.
Yeah.
Remember they built that big crazy machine. The one blew up, but then secretly there was like a billionaire who was funding another one being built. I picture in my mind that there's these scientists, these rogue scientists that have this some kind of crazy technology that they've acquired, and that there's these rich playboys that are out there funding this stuff, and nobody knows about what's going on. Whatever you want to name the corporation, and that's what's going on. And the reason you see different ones is because there's different guys doing that, and they're kind of showing off to each other. Oh, yeah, well, I've got a Chevron one, and I've got a triangle one. Or who knows, maybe it's extraterrestrials showing off, but they're definitely showing off, I think. How many times have you heard of these stories where, we'll get to a military case in a second, where these fighter pilots are flying around, and this has been going on since World War II with the Foo Fighters. It's almost like the craft is toying with them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, it's not engaging them, or it is, and then it's not, and then it's, you know, flying around, playing with them. It's like showing off, like, look, you think you got good technology, look at this, I can do a 100G turn right here. You know, I don't know,
right?
It's confusing. Now, you do have a couple chapters where you talk about people in the military, like pilots, having sightings. Could you tell us maybe one of those?
This one was a gentleman named Gary Travis, who was a commercial pilot, and he witnessed the orb phenomenon, you know, these orange orbs, almost like the Foo Fighters, you know, sort of updated and evolved at this point. And he saw them as he was flying his plane, and they were following him, following all around him, you know, almost like a choreographed dance around his plane, which led him to believe that whatever these things were somehow intelligently controlled. A lot of the times with these orb sightings, we hear that it's ball lightning, it's a weather anomaly, it's a reflection off a window. That's all good and fine, and I'm sure there are many cases in which that happens. But these things followed him for so long, and he tried to outmaneuver them, and they just kept on his tail the whole time.
You know.
So again, this event severely affected him, you know, being a pilot, knowing what's up there.
Yeah, swamp gas or ball lightning is not going to be able to change course when your plane's changing directions. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
We talk about it. Yeah. We were talking about it not too long ago on the show. Me and Cam were talking about, we were doing a segment on orbs, and we specifically were saying people throw out this idea of swamp gas or light refracting from a train or something, but I've never seen anybody be able to replicate that. Like, I've never seen a scientist go, look, I'm going to recreate, this is a demonstration to show you how I can take this swamp gas, or I can make ball lightning here, and you can easily see where people could misidentify it as a UFO, and then you show the demonstration, and you're like, oh, yeah, I could see where that would happen. It's all hearsay. I mean, it sounds like a theory to me, but I've never seen anybody be able to back it up and prove it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's crazy, you know? Just like in the book, and you bring it up in the book specifically, obviously there are hoaxers out there. There's a group of people that aren't having any experiences, but for whatever reason, they want attention. So they create this story of them having a sighting, or them being a contactee, or being abducted for whatever reason. And there's obviously several sightings that are just simply misidentification. I've been outside. I'm sure everybody has. Where you see a strange light and you're like, what is that? And then you watch it and then 5 minutes later, like, oh, it's a plane. I couldn't see the blinking light for a while, but now I can. But just like we talk about on our show all the time with cryptozoology, if 100 of the stories, if 80 of them are misidentifications and 20 of them or 10 more are hoaxes, it's that last tiny sliver, that last 10 that are unexplained. I mean, for all these people, for all these years, whether it was from Betty and Barney Hill all the way up into current times, they can't all be making up these experiences that they're having. What do you think about that? I mean, that's obviously, I mean, you say it in the book, but could you tell our listeners what your thoughts are after talking with all these people about, you know, they're generally, they believe they're having these experiences, so they can't all be fake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, when I first, you know, having had my own sighting, you know, I had a little biased at first, but to this day, I'm convinced that what I saw was most likely man-made. We're looking at mid-90s when stealth craft were starting to be seen. The location in which I had my sighting was kind of near an Air Force base. That aside, when I started getting deeper and deeper into this and hearing more about the experiencer aspect of all this, I was very skeptical. And I can admit this, say that I thought this was all in their heads. This was completely psychosomatic. These people were having sleep paralysis. They were having hypnagogic hallucinations. Whatever I could do to convince myself that, you know, some non-human intelligence was actually taking human beings and experimenting on them, that was good for me. But I remember sitting down with one of these experiencers for the first time. It was the first face-to-face interview I had, and watching her sit next to her husband, holding his hand and recalling what happened to her, to me, and just watching the tears come from her eyes and hearing her knee hitting the table, you know, underneath, how nervous she was, how anxious she was. And that was it for me, guys. Now, whether or not a non-human intelligence physically took this woman out of her bed, brought her up to some craft and experimented on her, I cannot say. And I don't even know if she can say. But she has this vivid memory of this happening. And I'm not going to take that away from her. Absolutely not. And like you said earlier, guys, these people firmly believe these events have happened to them. Some of them think it happened in the subconscious. Some of them think it happened in the physical realm that we know as reality. And again, I'm not going to cast judgment on that. I'm going to let them tell their story to someone who's willing to listen. And that's what this sort of all comes down to, in my opinion. Nobody really hears the experiencers out. And I always feel a sense that they are the backbone of the hard data. If you want to look at ufology as a scientific method, as a scientific study, that's fine. We need that. That is essential to move us forward. But I'm trying to do my part to show that the experiencers and the people having these sightings, they are a huge part of this. And like you said, if that 20% of sightings that cannot be explained are out there, they're going to keep being out there. And we have to keep looking at those cases.
I agree. I couldn't agree more. I mean, that's, we do it on the show all the time, whether it's cryptozoology sightings, UFOs, whatever. It doesn't matter, like you were saying, if the woman was physically transported into a spacecraft or it was just in her mind that they are somehow manipulating her mind. The experience for her is exactly the same, and it impacts these people's lives. And it changes them forever. And we always say, I can't judge. Unless I'm there, like the guy that was at the drive-in theater with his buddy, unless I'm there, how can I possibly tell you what you saw or didn't see? I can't do that. And I don't think that a lot of these people, they don't get any financial gain from making these stories up. Some of them, just like the guy at the drive-in, he forgot that it even happened until he was triggered by looking at that book. So how many times I've read these cases on alien abductees that don't even remember it happening till years later. Then they go and get hypnosis sessions done, and it turns out they've been getting abducted for years, mm-hmm. and they didn't remember mm-hmm. any of that. And so why would somebody make that up? And there's several, I mean, There's been all types of scientists that have researched this and looked into these people, and they're like, they're definitely telling the truth. They're not making this up. This is what I do for a living. This person experienced something, and it's rocked them to their core.
Absolutely. And, you know, science or psychological, I mean, look at someone like John Mack, the Harvard psychiatrist who looked into this phenomenon extensively. He looked at it as a very spiritual thing. And, you know, I found that a lot with this as well. People's beliefs change after these events. Things are unlocked in them. Their awareness is opened. And, you know, I'm not trying to get too metaphysical in the book either. What I'm showing is the impact. One guy became a pastor at a church after he had an experience. Another guy, here's one, he became an artist. He never had interest in art before this event happened, and he started seeing these geometric patterns after the event and creating. He started creating things. So you have to wonder, what is being unlocked in these people having the experiences, and how is that impacting humanity both at the individual level and as a collective humankind? It's fascinating. And that's really what I tried to get at with the book, is how do these quote-unquote alien phenomena, what do they show us about us as human beings? Let's put ourselves up to that mirror if we're really going to get crazy and bizarre with this alien stuff.
You did a fantastic job. I mean, so, for a long time, I was starting to think that ufology was dead. Because all the books that come out, they just rehash the same stories. We're talking about Roswell crash. We're talking about Rendlesham Forest. We're talking about Majestic 12. And I have to read a lot of these for the show. And so many times, it's the same stories. But you approached it in a new way, and you looked at the human side. And it was such, it was like a breath of fresh air. And so if anybody's interested in these types of subjects, the UFO phenomenon, I suggest you go down and get this book. It's Somewhere in the Skies. And Ryan, can you tell the people where to go to get this book?
Absolutely. It's available on Amazon in both paperback and ebook. It'll be available at Barnes & Noble soon, or they can always go to the publisher's website, richarddolanpress.com.
Awesome. Now, I know you're going to be speaking at the UFO Congress in February. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. This will be my first conference ever.
Uh-oh. So
I know. I'm excited. No pressure. I'm nervous.
No pressure.
Right, yeah. I know. No pressure in front of 2,000 people for the first time. No, I'm really excited, guys. I will be covering what you just mentioned, the study of ufology and how we can move it forward in new ways. You can connect UFOs to anything, religion, theology, anthropology, psychology. There's a place for it everywhere, guys. So I am convinced ufology is not dead, and I'm going to be giving my own thoughts on that in February. So you can figure, or you can find that at UFOCongress.com.
That's awesome. I saw that David Marler's going to be speaking there, and I actually saw him speak this last April at the Ozark Mountain UFO Conference, and he is a really cool guy. I got to talk with him backstage for about an hour, and he's really cool if you've never heard him speak before. They do a great job.
David, I'm working with on my own UFO sighting, guys.
Nice.
As you know, he's connected to triangular UFOs. Mm-hmm. He's done the most research on them. So a shining beacon in the field for sure.
It was great. Yeah, his whole speech was wonderful. It was a wonderful thing.
Are there any other speaking engagements or book signings and stuff where people can come out and meet you? Or is that the only one on the books right now?
I've got one coming up later in 2017 in Nova Scotia, of all places.
Oh,
so
wow.
That's going to be really cool. I should have some more info coming up on that one. And also I'll be doing a talk for MUFON later next year as well. You can find out all that stuff on my website. It's just somewhereintheskies.com.
And if they wanted to hear you weekly, where do they find you?
Ooh, good plug, my man. Shannon would kill me if I didn't do that.
Right?
I do co-host a podcast weekly with Shannon LeGros and Sam Sheeran, the master of the dark arts. That's Into the Fray Radio, intothefrayradio.com, and you can hear that every Thursday at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Yeah, we were actually a guest on there one time, but the one time we were on there. You weren't available.
I know. I love that episode.
You ditched us. You ditched us, Ryan. That's what it was. You ditched us.
No, you know what? Someone didn't call me that night.
Right?
So I'm going to blame this one on Shannon.
Well, thanks so much for coming on the show. You have a good Christmas, Ryan.
You too, guys. Happy holidays. And again, such an honor.
Bye-bye. And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. Very interesting discussion with Ryan Sprague. We talked to him for a little bit on air. We actually spoke to him about an hour off air about lots of other things. And he's a great guy, man. And I really enjoyed his book because, like we brought up so many times during the interview, he really did come at it a different angle. There's so many, I mean, we do this for a living, and there's so many books that we have to read, so many articles, that it does kind of get monotonous after a while of the same old things, the same old things. So it's interesting when somebody like Ryan or like our friend Joshua Cutchin, when they come up with these new ways of talking about something that's familiar to us. And so I really like the book. I suggest everybody, if you have a loved one out there that's into UFOs or you yourself are into UFOs, Christmas is coming up. You should go out and get Somewhere in the Skies, A Human Approach to an Alien Phenomenon. And it's available at Richard Dolan Press. I think you can get it on Amazon and stuff. I will put links to it in the show notes. Or you can visit Ryan's website, somewhereintheskies.com. Also, don't forget, like I said, he's on the podcast Into the Fray. Mm-hmm. And you can check him out over there. They do a show every week. Pretty cool. What did you think about the book? And what did you think about Ryan?
Well, first of all, Ryan's a great guy. I love that guy. It's, you can tell talking to Ryan, what I enjoyed the most is he's genuine about his care for these people and wanting to really get that. He's, a lot of people we run into, you can tell they're writing a book just to be writing a book, you know, and you and I have even discussed it, and we've even been guilty of it. Is you just like, you know what, I want to write a book just so I can say I wrote a book. And but what are you going to add? What are you really going to do? You know, I mean, I understand fiction, but the nonfiction book writing is different. And what he did was take something like you brought up, like what Joshua did. Is it something that nobody's really broke down and looked at and really wanted to break down how it's affected these people? And I just, I don't know, I just enjoy different ideas than what everybody keeps rehashing and recovering and redoing. And I like the different take on it, the whole idea of this different stuff.
I agree with you. And also, I mean, everybody knows that listens to the show that I'm not a big fan of, what for whatever reason, water cryptids. I have never been a huge fan of UFOs. I've always been generally a little bit interested in them. But I don't know. I don't know what's happening to me. Slowly, over the last like 4 or 5 months, I'm actually becoming more and more interested in this UFO phenomenon. I've been reading more. I catch myself reading more articles on it, reading more books on it. I think I've even done more segments on it. So I'm starting to get really interested in that. I'd like to talk real quick a moment about our sponsor, Gaia.com. When I was younger, I used to love the show Unsolved Mysteries. Mm-hmm. You remember that? Mm-hmm. With Robert Stack? And I used to also love In Search Of with, what's his name? Nimoy.
Leonard Nimoy, yeah.
Yeah, and another show that I used to watch all the time when I was younger, this was like in the 80s. It was Arthur C. Clarke's Mysterious World. You remember that show?
Yeah, he was great. Yeah.
Well, the reason I bring that up is because Gaia is re-airing those shows. You can get on there. Now, Arthur C. Clarke, remember, him and Stanley Kubrick wrote 2001 A Space Odyssey. Mm-hmm. Well, he's Sir Arthur C. Clarke. Don't forget, he was knighted. And all the episodes are on there. There's 13 episodes so far. And they're really interesting. They got one about the monsters of the deep. They got one about ancient wisdom. They got one titled The Missing Ape Man. They got one called Giants for the Gods, Monsters of the Lakes, The Great Siberian Explosion. I mean, on and on and on. They've even got one about dragons, dinosaurs, and giant snakes. And I've only watched a handful of them, but I used to remember that when I was a kid. And so I've been going back and watching those. If you're interested in that kind of thing, you can sign up at Gaia.com. I think it's $9.95 a month if you want to go month to month. They have other plans, 3-month plan and an annual plan. Of course, you get discounts for signing up. The longer the plan, the bigger the discount. If you sign up now, your first month is only 99 cents. And they've got over 7,000 other videos over there. Not just series. They got documentaries. They got stuff on spiritual growth, ancient wisdom. Deep Space is another incredible series over there. I really like it. If you like ancient aliens, you'd probably like that. It's much like that. It's got guys like Nick Redfern, guys like that we have on the show all the time over there. Richard Dolan, he's on there. And very interesting. I really enjoy this streaming service.
Well, it's funny that you bring up the deal with Arthur C. Clarke, because I remember when you talk about the giant snakes, it jogged my memory. Now, you and I have covered some of that in the past. But I always think of, there was a fella on there with the last name of like Laird. His first name was Remy, and I can't remember, He was a Belgian pilot.
That's
what
right,
he was.
In the Amazon, right?
In the 50s. Yeah, I want to say it was like 1959, almost not. But it was where he claimed he had taken the picture of that giant
snake. Yeah, I've seen the photo.
In the Congo. It was down in the Congo, in that region, is where it was at. It's supposed to be like 50 feet long. And then he said that the head of the snake was 3 feet long and 2 feet wide.
Yeah, and this was in the 50s, so this was before Photoshop and all that. I remember seeing that photograph as a kid. I think I was watching that television show.
He said
when
he circled it, yeah. And he came back, but he didn't want to get too low because it reared up. And he said it was like 10 foot off the ground.
Man.
He's like, he knew if he'd have got down too close, he thinks he could have got it. And I guess the thing with it, because it's on there. It's in that giant snake thing is where I saw it on Arthur C. Clarke's deal. But it always makes me think back to, why would he make that up? You know, why would this guy go into making this stuff up? He was in the British Royal, like, he was a colonel.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about him like, come on, man, why would you make something like that up? And he's a trained observer if he's a pilot and he's gone through all this stuff.
When I hear these stories, it reminds me of the new King Kong movie that's coming out, Skull Island, you know, where that island has all the giant animals. That's what I always think of when I think back of these giant snakes,
right?
Or giant Komodo dragons or something like Mokilio Mbembe. I'm always thinking of like Skull Island. Is there an island somewhere out there that still has these giant creatures still on?
I hope so.
I do too, right? That'd be really...
Man, I hope so.
Really cool. Well, what do you got planned for the rest of your week?
Man, just a normal work grind. We did a little birthday with my son over the weekend. He turned 23. And just getting, you know, like I said a few shows ago, I'm kind of under the gun trying to get everything fitted in before all these breaks and all this stuff with our lab work and all that. So that's pretty much it. But nothing's too crazy. Everything's going great. The weather's great. Just having a good time. I mean, this is some fun time for us, you know, with all the family. And I like the cold. I like the food. I like all the jolliness. Yeah. We're going to have a good time.
I agree with
you. What about y'all? What are y'all doing?
I got a pretty busy week this week. Just trying to get everything wrapped up before the kids are out of school. They get out of school for like 2 whole weeks coming
up. What do we got? Like, it's just like a week and a half, and then they're out.
So we got to get on that. I got to get all my work done before then. If you'd like to share your stories with Expanded Perspectives, you can email us at expandedperspectives@yahoo.com, or you can always call the show, 817-945-3828. And don't forget about Expanded Perspectives Elite. If you only listen to Expanded Perspectives, you're only listening to 50% of the shows. If you become an Elite member, you get to hear an additional show every Thursday or Friday in addition to the Monday show. So you'll be getting twice as much. And if you join up now, you'll get access to the entire back catalog. There's over like 115 episodes over there now, and it's only $5 a month. You can go to the website, expandedperspectives.com. Go click on the tab and signing up is easy. And the reason I bring this up is Christmas is coming up. I recently had a couple people email me wanting to know if they could buy an Elite subscription for someone else.
That's a good idea. That's a really good someone else right there.
Right? And the answer is yes, you can do that. So if you have a person in your life that's a really big fan of Expanded Perspectives, you can sign them up for Elite. And that'll probably be their favorite Christmas gift that they get for the season.
That's what I'm going with. That's what I'm going with.
All right. Well, I hope everybody has a good week. Take care. Be safe. For you Elite members, we'll be speaking to you on Thursday. For everybody else, we'll be speaking to you again next Monday. I'm Kyle Filson. He's Cam Hale.
Peace, y'all.